Welcome to the Java.net Community Corner podcast series for Java 1 2008. In this series of podcasts, we bring you the activity of the Community Corner, located at booth 101 on the Java 1 Pavilion floor, including mini-talks about projects hosted on Java.net and other community activities. All right, it is 7:30 on Tuesday night. It is time for the last of today's, or tonight's, Java.net Community Corner mini talks, and we are doing a redo because we managed to mess up the podcast recording. This is a redo of the Greenfoot presentation by Michael Colling and Devin McCall. So take it away, guys.
Thanks for the introduction. So this is Devin McCall from Deakin University in Melbourne, and I'm Michael Colling from the University of Kent in England. We are both working on the Greenfoot team, and we are here to give you a short, quick demo of Greenfoot. I first tell you just a minute or so what Greenfoot is about, and then we will spend most of our time just doing demos. We don't give you a long bit of theory and background. You'll get the idea as we show the system, I guess. Greenfoot is a programming environment that was designed specifically for teaching programming at school level, at secondary school or high school level. And one of the problems that is very well known with teaching programming at school is that when you start talking to them about programming, even before you start talking, three quarters of them are not interested at all. They have already decided before you even open your mouth that programming isn't interesting. And that is one effect that we have to battle very strongly. And Greenfoot is designed very much around this problem, in getting to a point where we can engage them very quickly, very early on. So one of the goals of Greenfoot is to make it very visual, very interactive, very, very engaging right from the start. And we have done a demo before, and Devin here with me is running the demo. And just to confuse him, we'll do something completely different than what we did
first time.
Why don't we just start with an empty project and create an entirely new scenario without any preparation from scratch? So Devin is just bringing up here a new scenario. Give it a name. What do we want to call it?
I don't know. It's your scenario.
Yeah, I haven't actually decided yet what we're going to do. So call it. Okay. Call it Water World. Maybe do something with water. Okay. Actually, I don't know whether I have a background prepared for water, but we'll see in a minute. So when we create a new Greenfoot scenario, what we're showing you here now is how easy it is, really, with no hidden tricks, no preparations, you know, I made this earlier, to really achieve something very, very easily. So we've just created here a new Greenfoot scenario. So you're ready, Devin?
Yes.
Yeah. You'll see that there are two classes in the scenario. By default, they are always there. There's a world class and a nectar class. And we can now make a world, make our own world, by subclassing the world class. Okay, we're creating a new subclass. Devin, why don't you look through the backgrounds and see what we have. Is there anything? I just called it water. Is there anything water-like?
Wet blue.
Yeah, let's take the blue. That's sort of at least sort of raindroppy kind of color. So we have chosen an image, a background image for our world, and we give it a name. So call it water world. Water world.
Oh. I'm still not used to where your shift key is, Michael.
Yeah. See, the thing is that I'm using a UK keyboard. Devin works in Australia, and we have different keyboards, so that makes him having to type on my keyboard makes it especially difficult. So here we have now a class that we've just created, and as soon as we compile this class, we should get an object, right? So I'm going to try and compile, and here is our world that we've just created. It gets a default size. It's not very big. Let's make it a little bit bigger and just show you how you can now manipulate the world itself. And here we see some source code has been generated automatically that creates the world, and there are definitions in here for the size of the world. So let's make it a 1 pixel resolution and something like, let's say, 500 by 400 pixels or so. And this is already all we have to do to create the world that we want to have. So here we have a world, and now we can start populating it with actors, with something that, that we want to happen in the world. So, Devin, create an actor. Let's try to choose something that fits our water theme. So if we look...
Do we want some sort of animal? Or?
Yeah, let's take some sort of animal. You see here, when we create a class in Greenfoot, the class will get a name like all every Java class in any environment. But in addition to the name in Greenfoot, classes also have images. So they, every class has an image associated with it. We've got a fish there.
One of
okay.
these fish?
Yeah, create a fish.
Just call it fish?
Yeah, just call it fish.
Very unimaginative.
You can call your instance Charlie later, but the class clearly is fish. Yeah. Okay, so we have here created a class for a fish. And now as soon as we've done that, we can immediately create fish objects. So just place a few fish in our water. In this case, actually, the image doesn't have a transparent background, not the best constructed image, but you get the idea that that doesn't really matter for our problem. And now once we have a class fish, you can see it has already compiled, which means it is syntactically valid. When you create a new class in Greenfoot, it gets a default skeleton that doesn't really do anything, but it is a syntactically valid class so that it compiles. And we can create objects. Yeah, you can create another one. Just put a few fish into your world. And now we can click the run button. And when we run this, nothing happens. And the reason why nothing happens, I mean, it's not surprising, we haven't written any code yet. But now we can start making things happen. So let's open the editor for the fish class, and we see that here is an act method, but it is empty. And here is now where we can start writing our code. The Greenfoot environment has an API that provides some methods for actors, and one is one for setting the location. Shall we make it move first?
Sure. Or should I make the font a bit bigger on the editor? Or?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Make the font a bit bigger, then it's a bit easier to read. I believe, well, we are being recorded, so for our listeners, you can make the font a bit louder. We've got it a bit bigger now. And so the Greenfoot API, the actor API, has a method called setLocation that lets us change the current location of an object. So we can write setLocation in here, and then the question is what... do we want to set the location to? We also have two methods to get the current location. We can use get x and get y to get our current coordinates. Set location takes two parameters. So if you write set location get x and get y, this is syntactically valid. Of course, it won't do anything because we're setting ourselves to our current location. But if we now add something to, say, the x coordinate, now we get our current x coordinate and add a bit and take that as our new location, that should create movement. Let's try that out. So once we have written this code, we can compile, place the fish back into the world, and see what it does, and then run the scenario. And there they move. And we have a speed slider here. We can make that as fast as we want. So we have, with a single line of code, after about 5 minutes or so, animated graphics on screen. Now, for a teaching situation, this is incredibly powerful. Now we have, instead of starting with big long explanations what public static void main means, or then arriving at the end of the first week as being able to printing out the numbers from 1 to 10, now we get within the first 10 minutes animated graphics on screen. Let's now jump a bit forward. Let's close this scenario, I'd say, and show what you can get to after a while. You've got a question, yeah?
Oh.
Does it keep doing act until it can't do it anymore? Or did you press it multiple times?
When you click the run button, it does keep doing act over and over again. And you'll notice, although it's grayed out, the run button's now a pause button. And basically, if you click that, it stops the run loop, and then you can continue to click act individually if you want to.
Yeah. Why don't you open our next scenario? Yeah. I was thinking we use the end scenario next. And then you can demonstrate what you just said and show what it does. As you've seen, the actor, by default, had this act method. In fact, all the actors in Greenfoot will have this act method. And you see here are the act and run buttons. Clicking the act button calls the act method exactly once on every actor in the world. And then there's the run button.
Yeah, shall we just run this for a little bit?
And yeah, then, just run that for a little bit. And if you now pause it and do the acts separately, a few steps. You see, if you click the act button, every ant here moves a step forward. And run is nothing else than a loop around act. It just does act over and over again until you pause it. So the functionality of run is very simple.
So I'll let it keep running.
Okay. So, you see, this is an example, you know, what you can get to then from your first fish in the water scenario. Here we have a simulation where we have two ant hills and the ants are running around and there are food sources. The behavior of the ant is programmed in a fairly simple way. It's not very sophisticated. They just run around randomly, and when they find some food, then they turn back to the anthill and run back to the anthill they came from. And while they run back to the anthill, they leave drops of pheromones on the ground. That are these white clouds that you see here. And when other ants smell these pheromones, they just turn away from the anthill and go that way. And that's already the whole behavior. And then you get this emergent behavior, the system behavior, which is this trail forming. If you've got enough ants together, you get these stable trails forming out of the very simple behavior of the individual ants. And that is a kind of simulation that is quite interesting to play with, that you can get to fairly quickly from doing the first movement. So when we have beginning students and on their first day they can make, you know, an animal move across the screen, after only a few weeks they are at a point where they can write things like this. So the ant scenario now here has five classes and has a total of about 260 lines of code. So that is at a level of complexity that students can reach within a couple of months or so. So fairly quickly they get into a range where they can write really quite interesting applications. What shall we show next?
How about Lunar Lander? That's a good one.
Yeah. Open the Lunar Lander. That's a good idea. That shows, I mean, that's the sort of obvious next step from simulations like this is games, right? We already have animated graphics on screen. We only need one additional thing, and that is being able to control something in the keyboard or mouse control, and we have a game. And so here is an example of a very simple game. It's a Lunar Lander game, and Devin will now demonstrate how to land to land our lander. It is actually very difficult. It is written so that you have to land really, really slowly. With there's almost no tolerance. It's quite difficult to do without blowing up. So you get one more chance. And when you succeed, it should put up a flag.
Ah, it's too hard, Michael. who wrote this game?
It was Paul who's written this. And you can see that. Just put the flag up. Yeah. Manually, if you want, because it's another member of our team has written this, and he is Danish, as you can see with the flag that comes up when you succeed. It's a Danish flag, because, and this is the cheating version of succeeding.
Oh, it still didn't work.
The nice thing about this is that you can actually interactively play with things. It's very nice to try things out. Let's say we've just written the explosion and nothing else, and you want to see whether it looks right or whether it sounds right. You know, without doing anything else, you can just run the scenario, and then take an explosion and drop it in and see what it looks like. You know, you just put the explosion into the world, and you can see it doing what it's doing. You know, and so you don't have to write a complete application to get the first feel for what it does. As soon as you've created one part of the application, you can immediately try it out. There is no need to write a test harness or a big framework to get things running. You've just finished writing one or two methods of a single object, and you just put it in and see it run. And in fact, here we can play with that a bit more, because the explosion is in fact written in a way that when the explosion intersects any other object, it will explode that object as well. Let's look at the code. It's right at the end of this. The code is quite simple. Here is this code that the explosion does. It's called Explode Others. So it's only really the 6 lines of code. And what it says here essentially is, you know, the explosion gets all the intersecting objects. So here they will get a list of all the objects that intersect the image of the explosion. And then we iterate through that list and we say, if we find anything here that is not itself already an explosion, then we remove it from the world and put a new explosion in its place. And that's it. You know, and so if we try that out, just we can put a flag or put a few flags in there. And see, we don't have to write test code to test this. We can just interactively try it out. So if you put a row of flags in there, okay, and now start run it first and drop an explosion on one side, and then we see whether this works.
Well, you know, we can actually drop a rocket as well and then let that land.
Oh, yeah.
And then it will explode.
You could just drop a rocket down.
I know this from past experience.
And you get this chain reaction. So it's a very nice environment to just quickly try things out. You know, I've got very often when I teach school kids with this environment that they come with questions, say, well, what would happen if I do this? You know, the answer is always, you know, try it out. It's very often really easy to just try things. Show them the asteroids scenario for a moment. Just to show you sort of the quality of animation that you can get, to show what kind of sort of the, you know, smooth movement that we can do. If you just run this, you can see you really can get a quality of animation, a quality of gameplay that is really playable. You know, so it's not jerky, it's not sort of poor quality, but you can really play this. You know, so and you can achieve. we are all watching Devin try to win his game here.
This one I can play.
He's done that before. See, that is when we work on Reaper.
Hooray!
Hey! Oh!
The nice thing to when you work on Greenfoot, of course, is that you can sit in your office and play games all day and call it work. Okay, let's get back from these shooter games for a moment, because one very, now fairly serious, very important goal of Greenfoot was that we really want to be able to target different user groups. And for example, girls is a group in computing education that is very severely underrepresented. We all know that. We all would like to engage girls more in computing. And there have been many studies that say that girls do not like the same computer games that boys like. And for a while there were statements that said that girls don't like computer games. In fact, there have been several serious studies now that show that is not quite true. But girls like different kinds of computer games. And so we've very consciously designed Greenfoot so that it's not...
Good evening, John 1 Coke boxers, exhibitors, and attendees. It is currently 7:50 p.m., and the welcome reception will end in 10 minutes. Please note that the pavilion will close at the end of the reception. Thank you.
Okay, an interruption here by an announcement. That means we still have 5 minutes maybe before we have to finish up here. What do we show? Let's show them the piano, for example. So what we're getting at here is, you know, we didn't want an environment that really is geared towards shooting games or towards robot games. Or something. We want an environment where everyone can do something that they are generally interested in. And it doesn't have to be shooter games. For example, here, if this is a piano example, if you run this, you can now play with a keyboard. And that just makes music. That's all it does. No, but it shows you can do very different things in Greenfoot. You know, you can anything that has as its output two-dimensional graphics, you can very, very easily do. Greenfoot makes it very easy. In fact, it gives it essentially to you for free to get graphics onto the screen. And so from then on, it's up to your imagination. Let us maybe show one more thing. Shall we show them the wave example? I like the wave.
Oh, yeah.
games are, of course, really nice to sort of engage a good sort of share of the population. There's lots of kids get interested through games. But you can do a bit more interesting stuff as well. For example, here we've got a scenario that simulates just propagation of a wave on a string. So it's a very simple physics simulation. You can change several parameters here. You can change the damping. And so if you wiggle the end of the string around, you can see how the waves propagate. Or we can oscillate it automatically and then just play with those parameters. And that's an example where you can actually do things that feel a bit more real, you know, that have some... This is really simulating how things are in real life, and you can learn something not only about programming, but about physics. You know, if you give that to someone sort of in fifth grade, they can, you know, see what happens. And you can see here sort of constructive and destructive interference where it goes up and down and all this stuff. So if you think a bit about it, there is really sort of learning going on at different levels if you really prepare your examples right. And I think, seeing that we will be checked out here in a few minutes, we'll end here and see if there are any questions before we go. Well then, thank you all very much for coming.
All right, thank you very much to Michael Kohling and Davin McCall of the Greenfoot Project. And that's going to wrap it up for today's mini talks. And thank you, everybody, for coming out to the Java.net Community Corner.
This has been the Java.net Community Corner podcast. Come visit us at booth 101 on the pavilion floor or visit the homepage at www.java.net for all our Java 1 updates.